This is Dr. Jay Corsandi, and you're listening to The Best Night Ever, the show that's dedicated to helping you get your best night's sleep. Over the last 20 years of treating patients, I've worn many hats, including dentist, engineer, psychologist, artist, corporate executive, and more. I've found that the key to success, health, and longevity lies in sleep, and that's why I created this show. I want to teach you how to make sleep your best friend. Join me on a journey to uncover cutting-edge science, life-changing tips from renowned experts, ancient and modern sleep secrets, game-changing routines, and lifestyle hacks that will educate, inspire, and ultimately help you get the best night ever. Hey everyone, now this is my kind of podcast. We're talking about meditation. So a lot of episodes lately have been featuring products and technologies that are designed to help you with the stresses of life, but oftentimes it can be financially difficult for a lot of people to obtain or use these things. So I wanted to get back into some basic life hacks. And I can't think of anything more basic than just closing your eyes and breathing. Whether you're an expert meditator, a casual practitioner, or someone that's totally new, this episode has something for everyone. In this episode, I'm sitting down with David Gandelman, who, as you will soon hear, sounds a bit like me both in tone and attitude. We're both pretty laid-back kind of guys. Here's a little bit more about David. He's a spiritual teacher, host of his own podcast called the Energy Matters Podcast and Grounded Sleep Podcast, and teaches meditation at Cornell University, as well as the Den Meditation Studio here in Los Angeles, which I have been to and is actually quite fabulous. So I met David about a year ago at a conference, and as I got to know him over time, I knew he would be a great fit for the show. And speaking of show, here are some of the things that we're going to discuss. So we're going to find out what started his journey into meditation, what the goal of meditation is, why is it gaining in popularity so much these days, and if you haven't heard about meditation, you might want to start thinking about it. The different styles of meditation and which one is best for you. There's things like TM, which is transcendental. There's guided meditations. There's one called Vedic. So we're going to go over a couple of those, and it was a great discussion. The definition of mindfulness, perhaps you may have heard that, and what it means to be aware. How to start meditating. If you've never done it, this is a great little primer into how to get your toes in the water with some meditating. How meditation can improve your life. The role of mantras in meditation. You may have heard the word mantra, so you're going to learn about what that is and how that can help you. Why do people quit meditation? Because a lot of people will get into it and then they'll stop, and we'll see why they do that. When's the best time to meditate, and maybe how long you should meditate for? He has a very interesting answer that's kind of contrary to what I've heard before. How meditation can help with sleep, and a lot more. As always, you can find me on my Instagram account at sleepbiohacker. That is someone that likes to hack their sleep, and that's what one of my main goals is with this show, is how to hack your sleep. And in this case, we're talking about meditations, but again, I am at sleepbiohacker on Instagram. And if you enjoy this show, please help me out by hitting the subscribe button on your app or a review, as that helps me continue to make this podcast and share all these crazy and fun things that I learned with you all. And now I invite you to sit back, relax, maybe close your eyes. Okay, don't close your eyes if you're driving. Take a deep breath in and enjoy the show. All right, we are live. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Jay. It's a pleasure.
Super excited to have you on here. We've been trying to get this locked down for a while. Yeah. Obviously, everybody's got busy schedules, but we were able to finally make it happen. And we're going to be talking about some meditation and some mindfulness and some awareness and all kinds of good stuff. But before we get into that, I kind of want to learn more about what got you into this whole meditation journey.
Sure. Well, I was pretty young. I was 16, and my brother came home from college after taking some psychedelics, and he was like, "You never read books, David." And so he took me to a Barnes & Noble, and he said, literally just buy any book that you see that you want. I picked up a book called The Power of Now. It was the year 2000.
Is that Eckhart Tolle?
Yeah, which, you know, he's huge now, but at the time he wasn't. And I just randomly picked it up. I brought it home. I read a chapter, and it was just like a light bulb turned on inside of me. Like something really, really shifted at that moment. And then I started meditating deeply from that time on, and I never stopped. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So thank you, Eckhart.
Eckhart Tolle,
I'm not the only person that's had that experience with his
book. You know, I haven't read his books, but I read The 10% Happier from Dan Harris. Yeah, and he talks about him as one of the people that got started on the whole journey as well, too.
I think he's probably the biggest meditation influencer of the last couple decades. Yeah. And thank you, Oprah, for making that happen.
Oprah's got some magic powers.
She's good at that.
So let me ask you this. What does meditation mean to you?
Sure. So for me, when I meditate, what it really does is help me find this still place where I can reflect on who I am and start to find my answers. So for a lot of people, when they come into meditation, they do it because they're in some kind of pain, like they're stressed out, they're anxious, they're constantly worried. And so they show up in one of my classes. But when they stick around and they deepen, they start to realize that there's something else beyond just trying to biohack ourselves out of stress. That's important, but it's not necessarily enough. For me, when I started, that wasn't the case. I didn't start meditating because I was stressed. I just started meditating because I had this realization from reading that book when Eckhart says, we're constantly projecting into the future and into the past, and we're never present. And when I read that, I was like, holy crap, he's so right. I'm never here. I'm always in my head in the future. And so when I realized that, something in me shifted, and I started meditating and found this really deep place inside myself. And from that deep place, whenever I had a question that I would ask, an answer would start to arise. So what's my next step in life? Why does this thing hurt? Why am I stuck over here? What do I want to create next? Usually when people go to try to find an answer for themselves, they do one of two things. One, they go into the analytical part of their heads and they just get lost in weighing the pros and cons and spinning and what will other people think? Is this the right thing to do? And they can't find an answer. And then the other thing people do is they just try to feel into their answer, right? Like, let me just feel what's right. Someone will say, I left the relationship because it didn't feel right. And those are two places we can go to find our answers. But for those really deep questions in life, they're not always enough. And there's a deeper place to find our answers, from my experience, in meditation. And like those really big questions, like, is this the right partner? What should I do with my life? Who am I? What's the nature of reality? I don't think we can get those answers purely from our intellect or from our feeling space. We have to sit still, and it's almost like life teaches us. So for me, that's what I found to be the most beneficial from meditating. And obviously all the byproducts of like lower stress, less anxiety, sleeping better, which we'll talk about today. All of those things for me are almost byproducts.
Okay. Yeah. Speaking of meditation and popularity, I know we were talking off mic as well too, that it's really gaining traction across the planet, I think. Well, what's
huge.
The reason why it's getting so much more popular these days? Because it's not something new, obviously.
Yeah, it's thousands of years old, and all of a sudden meditation's become the new yoga, right? It's the next thing. We both live in LA. You see the meditation studios popping up all over the place where people come to do nothing but meditate. Back in the day, they used to call those places monasteries. Mm-hmm. Now they're the cool place to hang out. I teach at a place called The Den in LA, and it's like the cool place to go and hang out and meet people, because I think a lot of people are interested in wellness now. It's cooler than going out and drinking.
Yeah.
So they're like, where can we go to meet other people who are interested in wellness? I think the main reason is that we live in a very stressed out society where there's just way too much input of information. And we just don't, our systems, our biological mental systems don't know how to deal with this much energy and input. And it's stressing us out so much that we're looking for ways to heal it and solve it other than just taking medication. Obviously, you know, working out and moving your body is very helpful for relieving stress. But on a mental and emotional level, a lot of the clients that I work with and students are looking for an organic, deep, sustainable way to feel better. And meditation, I think, is an essential tool in that toolkit.
Okay. So when you mention the word meditation for someone who's never done it, and even me, like when I first started doing it, I'm thinking, oh, I need to get on a flight to India and stay in a monastery or an ashram.
I did that. Yeah.
And it becomes a little intimidating for people that have never done it. What, you know, how do you explain it to people when they've never done it before?
Sure. So they have done it before. They just call it something else. So what I would say is, have you ever had a moment where all of a sudden you just feel like you're totally present in this moment? It may have been from a kiss or skydiving or playing a sport or painting or making music or walking in the forest. And all of a sudden your energy just and attention just draws into this moment and you feel present and you feel a stillness. That's all it is, right? You're just doing it consciously without needing some external stimulus. So you close your eyes, you focus on your breath, you become aware of your body, and all of a sudden you start to settle more into this moment. So there's nothing that intimidating about it on the surface of it, right? You're just sitting still, which should be easy. But what happens is, because so many of us are nervous wrecks and we're constantly worried, we close our eyes, and instead of there being deep inner stillness like a tree, we find a mess. We find enormous amounts of mental noise and these like stories, these looping thought patterns that just come around again and again. And we have no idea how to deal with them. And slowing down actually stresses us out more because we become more aware of this acute energy that's underneath the surface. So I think that's why a lot of people are actually intimidated by meditating, because they're going to have to start to face some of the pain that's already there that they've been ignoring.
Okay. And I was going to ask you this, and I think you hit it right on the head there. Whenever I go to meditate, the first things that pop into my head are negative, anxious, worrisome thoughts of the future or the past or mistakes I've made. Why do you think we always tend to almost default to that state rather than I just close my eyes and think of like an ocean or a forest or something? Why do we always go that way?
That is a really great question. Probably because you're already in that state when your eyes are open and you're just overriding it. So it's underneath your normal everyday consciousness, or it might even be seeping through. You might not even realize it's coming through your language. It's coming through how you drive. It's coming through how you communicate to your partner. Like, oh my God, we have no time left. We got to get to this party. What if instead you were just like, hey, let's take a deep breath and we're going to be late. Screw it. I love you. Right? So it's already there. Maybe you just aren't recognizing it so much. So if you close your eyes and all you see is stress and anxiety, it's already there. If you went to the Himalayas and sat with a Buddhist monk, or you went to a place like where I spent a lot of time in Bali and you were walking on the beach with some Balinese, you might not find that that's going on in their heads as much because we're all, to a certain extent, a product of our environments.
Yeah.
So if you live a very busy, stressful life, then that's what's going to be going on inside you. So that's what the surface level. Then going a little bit deeper, if somebody suffers or has suffered something very traumatic, right, in their lives, and they never really healed it, some form of abuse or something like that, when they go to close their eyes, it might start to rear its ugly head out of the unconscious. But it might take many different forms. Like it might take the form of stress or anxiety. It might cloak itself in anger. And we don't realize what it actually is. I cannot tell you how many times I've worked with clients who say to me, oh, I'm super stressed about work, David. And then when we go a little bit deeper, we find that there was child abuse. And that's what the real issue is. Or I'm so angry at my ex-husband. Oh my God. And then we go a little bit deeper and realize they were invalidated in their teenage years about something. And that was the real issue. And so what we think it is almost always isn't what it really is.
Mm.
You know, when you have an argument with your partner about who left the sock on the floor?
Yeah.
And it just blows out into something bigger and you realize it was something that happened a couple years ago that you never reconciled. It's almost the same thing in your own meditation. I can almost guarantee you that surface level stress and anxiety that you feel has something deeper to it. There's some kind of energy that's making it manifest. And when you start to go deep in meditation, eventually you'll hit that. And if you could pull it up at the root and really heal yourself from a deep place from the inside out, things won't bother you that much.
So would you say that's the goal of the meditation then, is to become less affected by stressors?
Definitely less reactive.
Less reactive.
More responsive, less reactive. So I can't choose what happens in life, right? None of us can say, God, universe, whatever's out there, stop punishing me. none of us can choose what happens, but we do get to choose how we respond. And it reminds me of this story of the Buddha that I heard, that some guy was really angry that his whole family was meditating with the Buddha and no longer practicing their Hindu rites and rituals. And he went to the Buddha and he was going to hit him over the head and yell at him and get really aggressive. And apparently he walked up to him, and before he could do anything, the Buddha said, "Hey, look, before you hit me or come at me, can I just ask you a question?" And he goes, "Do you ever have guests at your house?" And the guy goes, "Of course, I have guests all the time." You know, his ego comes out. And he goes, "Do those guests bring you gifts?" And the guy goes, "Yes, they bring gifts." And the Buddha goes, "Great. Well, I don't accept your gifts." Just saying, you can have all the anger you want. I'm not going to absorb it. I'm not going to react to it. And I'm not going to take it. And I think meditation helps us get to a place where we're more conscious, and so we react less. Not that we will ever be perfect. I don't claim to be perfect. I've never met anybody that is, but perhaps we react less. And maybe if we do get lost in anger or some other negative emotion, we get lost for less time and we come back faster. I think the goal is progress, not perfection.
Mm. In terms of reacting less, I know I've thought about this in a weird way. I've said, okay, I'm going to meditate and I'm going to become less reactive. But then I feel like maybe I'm becoming too soft, or yeah, I'm going to be a pushover, or maybe I'm becoming exposed or vulnerable. So how do you mitigate that?
Also, great question. For some men who meditate a lot, am I becoming too feminine, too weak, right? Where's my hard edge and my boundary? I think that it's a little bit like a pendulum. So maybe you do get too soft, which could be good for a while. You get really in touch with your emotions, really in touch with your feelings. And then maybe you recognize, oh, I can be vulnerable and soft, and I could be strong. And perhaps my vulnerability is my strength.
So we're talking about going to India and Bali and all these beautiful exotic places. And a lot of these are associated with different styles of meditation. I've heard of transcendental, TM, Vedic, guided, Vipassana, 10-day retreats. There's so many different kinds. And for people who've never really dived into meditation, where do you start, or which one's the best, or how do you figure that out?
Yeah, so I think there's one that's probably right for you at a certain given time and cycle of your growth. So I don't think there's one that's best. When I started doing a lot of Vipassana style meditation. You know, those 10-day, they have these 10-day retreats that you go on that you're silent, which was very intense and painful and also incredibly powerful. And then my style started to change over time. So I think that you have to find something that works for you right now. In the beginning, a lot of people will start with something like TM, Transcendental Meditation. And I actually used to live in the ashram next door to the ashram the Beatles lived in India, where they learned TM, which is how it became so popular. And in TM, they give you a mantra and you say it over and over and over again. For me, in the beginning, doing meditations like that was really helpful. It gave me something to focus on. But then after a while, I realized, oh, I just want to sit still. I want to reflect. I want to focus on silence. And so my style started to change. So there's not one right meditation. I wouldn't say, but as a beginner, you want to make sure you choose something that you feel like you're going to stick with. So if you choose a meditation style and every time you sit, you're like, oh, this is going to suck, or I'm so bored, you're almost definitely going to quit. And what I've found with my students is I start a lot with them on working on their emotions, on their mental state, on what's actually bothering them versus just making them hold their bodies and minds and hostage into stillness. Like, I'm going to sit as still as I can. And it's so funny when I teach at the meditation studio, I'll say, all right, let's start our meditation. And you'll see everybody like perch up, back straight. Like, oh, I'm in perfect posture. Look at me. I'm a yogi. My legs are crossed. Yeah. I'm so good at this. And they're just like holding themselves hostage rather than actually letting themselves be natural.
Okay. Talking about postures here. Again, when people hear the word meditation, when I do, I think of like the Buddha type thing, cross-legged. You see at the nail salons and spas and things like that. Fingers connected, stiff. And then I'm also thinking, stop thinking. I'm so focused on getting thoughts out of my head, which is not the actual process. So how do you tell people, you know, that might be the wrong way to kind of look at it?
Couple things. One is, I would never compare yourself to a statue of a man that lived thousands of years ago in perfect posture. I think that is a mistake in and of itself. And you'll see that happen in every spiritual and religious tradition across the board. We compare ourselves, right? And one of my teachers always says, if you want a perfect teacher, choose a dead one.
Okay.
So easy. He's a statue. So I'm not big on posture at the beginning of your meditation practice. I let my students put their feet out when they sit on these meditation chairs on the floor. There's a backrest, but then they can put their feet out. And I like that for people who have knee issues. And then the other thing is you just have to be kind to yourself. That's the best way your unconscious is going to let you in. If your unconscious feels like you're attacking it, then it's going to close because its job is to protect you. So you have to be sensitive in letting yourself just open instead.
Okay. In the world of meditation, again, there's another thing called mindfulness that I hear intermixed a lot as well too. How would you define mindfulness versus meditation? Are they separate? Are they together? Are they different?
Sure. Well, as Eckhart Tolle always likes to joke, he doesn't like the word mindfulness because he wants your mind to be empty. Mm. And it's funny that now the popular term is mindfulness.
Okay.
But that being said, mindfulness is really just your ability to bring awareness into this moment. That's how I see it. So a part of mindfulness practice might be you just scan your body and become physically aware, more aware of your body, or focus on your breath moving in and out of your body. Focus on the thoughts that are coming through your mind without being attached to them. Focus on your feelings and how they fluctuate. So you're being mindful of everything that you're experiencing in this moment. And as simple and almost as boring as that sounds, it has almost magical powers. When you just neutrally focus on what's in this moment and what you're experiencing, there is this almost transformation that starts to happen. So when somebody is, for example, like screaming in anger, you can tell behind their eyes, there's almost no awareness, right? They have no control with what they're doing and they have no control over their experience. They're reacting. Usually when somebody's screaming in anger, they're reacting. If you start bringing awareness into a moment like that, all of a sudden it loses its power. You see, how ridiculous is this that we are being violent towards each other verbally or even physically? There's some innate intelligence that comes with awareness. The more awareness, the more intelligent.
So awareness doesn't necessarily mean sitting down, closing your eyes and breathing for 20 minutes. I mean, I've had moments where I'm in the shower in the morning and literally just close my eyes for 10 seconds and just feel the water
absolutely
going down and just trying to be aware. And obviously then 10 seconds after I'm like, oh my God, I gotta get ready for work. I gotta head out.
That's right. And in Zen, what they do is they'll put you to work. So you'll rake the leaves, you'll cut the apples, you'll clean the monastery. And in doing all of these normal things, you're in the moment, you're drinking tea. So it doesn't have to be with your eyes closed, but we train ourselves to be more present by meditating with our eyes closed so that we can be aware with our eyes open.
So how does that compare to like a flow state? Would that be the same thing?
I think it is a flow state, except a flow state is also you have something you've mastered that you are now present with. That's how I see a flow state. So if you're an athlete and you're playing, you're present and you've mastered something, or you're a pianist, right? So, I mean, maybe that's not other people's definition of a flow state, but that's how I like to look at it.
I think that's a good definition.
Okay.
Yeah. I've used mantras before, and I know we kind of touched on that a little bit. Can you tell people who are listening who don't know what that is, what it is and how it's used, or and why you should use it or why you shouldn't use it?
Like I said earlier, I think that at the beginning of a meditation practice, it's useful in the sense that it gives you something to focus on. I think we all have mantras, whether we know it or not. Like you might be stuck in traffic and your mantra is like the F word over and over. Right?
This is true.
We all have mantras we may not even realize. And the usefulness of a mantra from my perspective is it gives you something to become aware of. And as you repeat it over and over, it's almost like an African drum. You know, they play them again and again in the same rhythm, sometimes for hours. And all of a sudden you go into this trance and you lose yourself and something in your awareness opens up. I wouldn't put too much stock or into the actual word. Like some people think a word has a special vibration to it and that's what does it. I really don't know about that. I think it's just the practice of saying something over and over focuses you, and it can even relax you. And in India, you'll hear this chant like Hari Ram, Hari Ram over and over, Hare Krishna, that I've sat in on those where they go for hours. So they'll even go 24 hours at a time and the musicians will just change out. So there's the link in the chain isn't broken. And after a while, you feel yourself being lost to this energy in the moment. So there's something powerful to be said about doing mantras.
That's amazing. And I've never done it that deep, but you know, I've noticed that if I do focus on something, the fact of my focus just on that relieves the focus on all the other stuff and just helps get into a kind of a nicer, deeper state.
But once the mantra ends, it might come.
What do you do when the mantra ends?
That's why for me, it's good as a beginning practice. But as you go deeper, eventually you have to look at the thing that's bothering you. I don't think you can mantra away your problems.
Okay. You heard that, folks. Speaking of a beginning practice, someone who wants to go out there and do this, do you recommend doing it on your own, watching YouTube videos, downloading an app on the phone, finding a teacher, going to like these places that are dedicated meditation studios? I mean, where does someone start with this?
Well, honestly, unless you live in LA or New York, I don't think you're going to find too many meditation studios. Most of my students find me on Insight Timer, which is an app that I teach on, which I think is a great way, that app or any app, to start and find a teacher who you like. So, you know, it's just like anything. You have to find a voice, an energy that you like, and a style. And so it takes some shopping around. So don't just, you know, fall in love with the first one. It's like dating, right? Yeah. Make sure you know what you're going for. So I do think using apps, if you have a chance to go in person, do that. I also think going on a meditation retreat is incredibly profound. So one of the ways that I finally was able to anchor a meditation practice was going to a 10-day Vipassana retreat.
Yeah.
And they're free. And the website is dhamma.org, dhamma.org. You can donate at the end if you want. When people hear 10 days of silence, they're like, no way, let me start with an app. But the cool thing about it is it really does force you into a practice because you have to work through so much energy. You're sitting 10 hours a day, all day. It's physically painful. The silence is the easiest thing, to be honest. Mm. I think going into the deep end like that, if you're really committed to having a consistent practice, it's a great way to go about it.
Okay. And I started out kind of the same way. I downloaded, you know, these fancy apps now, Calm and Headspace and all these ones out there. I did some, you know, even with my Alexa and Google Home, all those, they all have some meditations to start with. I think for me now, I've gotten to a point where I don't need a guided thing, you know, and I think that's a nice thing because if I'm somewhere without power, electricity, self signal, whatever, I know what to do at this point, which is powerful in itself.
I think the goal is eventually not to need guidance, right? Just like anything in life, you have a piano teacher and one day they let you loose and you're on your own doing your thing. I think where the guidance comes in really handy, one is at the beginning to create a structure for your practice, but then two is to go very directly at something specific. So maybe you really want some guidance on working with anger or grief or some guidance on visualizing your next step in life. So I think in those instances, if you want to learn a specific tool to work on something, guidance can be really helpful. If you're just wanting to sit still, then at a certain point, just, you know, sit still.
That's so difficult.
It is. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to play devil's advocate here and I'm going to start giving you some excuses.
Sure.
See what you say here. First is someone who says, you know what? I started doing meditation. Everything was going great, but I just stopped. I quit. I gave up. How do you address that?
I've had people tell me that and say, yeah, I went on medication instead, right?
Medication instead of meditation. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I would probe deeper as to why they gave up and do they feel better or worse? And the answer almost is always, I feel worse. I just couldn't stick with it. I don't have time, right?
Yeah.
What I would do with them at that moment is to focus in more closely on what is actually bothering you. So let's say I'm super stressed out, right? I quit. I'm too stressed. I can't sit. Every time I sit, I get more stressed. Great. 1 out of 10, how much do you want to heal this stress and anxiety? 11. Okay. 1 out of 10, how much effort are you putting into healing it right now? 2.5. Great. What are the ways that you override this instead of dealing with it? Give me some of the reasons. Netflix, drugs, alcohol, you know, excessive socializing, excessive social media. Cool. So let's find some wins here. Can we agree that you'll tone down the social media? You'll delete Instagram for a week at a time? Boom. Can you agree that you'll watch half as much Netflix as you do? And as they do that and their stress level comes down, it almost eases them back into meditation because now they're like feeling a little bit better and like, all right, I can go back in here. So sometimes it might be lifestyle.
Okay. Speaking of lifestyle, one of the other questions I know you touched on a little bit is, and I've said this to myself in my head, is I just don't have time. I mean, I've got work, you know, family life, yoga. I mean, so many different things going on in this podcast. Yeah. And it's like, well, when do I squeeze in some time to meditate? I just don't have time.
Yeah, everybody says that. And if you don't have time, if you feel like you don't have time, what I would say is the truth actually is almost always that you don't have space. And by space, I mean energetic space. So it's not so much time that you need, it's space. So for example, you think you don't have time, but you're scrolling on Instagram and you're probably doing that because there's too much energy inputted into your body and it's almost like a reaction. So you don't have mental space. If I gave you some mental space, like magically waved a wand, all of a sudden you'd be like, I want to go sit and meditate. And the time would almost magically appear. There are some cases where someone's like a single mom or, you know, there's five kids and like they're up at 5 a.m. and there's no way. And then I say, meditate when you get into bed to go to sleep, put on your headphones. No one's talking to you when you're going to sleep, right? So then that will be your time if that's truly the only time, or in the bathroom when you're showering.
Yeah.
But for the vast majority of people, that's almost never actually true. If you don't have 5 minutes, you really don't have a life. So I would say usually when people say that to me, that's their stress talking.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you mentioned that because there's apps on my phone that tell me how much I use my phone per day. Right. And I literally lift my phone 85 times a day in 4.5 hours of messing around. So there's no excuse. 4.5 hours, I could be way more productive doing all kinds of other things, let alone a 10, 15, 20 minute meditation.
That's right.
Speaking of time, is there a optimal time to meditate or preferred time or
time of day?
Time of day.
I would say no, but I think for most people, meditating in the morning and then again in the evening is really great way to go about it. In transcendental meditation, you'll hear a lot of celebrities like Jerry Seinfeld, Howard Stern, a lot of these guys, they'll meditate in the morning and then again, they'll meditate in the afternoon at like 4 p.m. But for me, I think morning and evening is best. But everybody's different. So if you're only going to meditate once, I would say meditate in the morning because the day is going to unfold out of the consciousness that you cultivate, out of the awareness that you're in. Mm. So if you wake up in a reaction to social media or the news or to your partner, then the rest of the day is kind of going to, the dominoes are going to get knocked down and unfold that way. So if you can start off by really setting an intention, this is how I want my day to go. This is the, not so much I'm going to control the outcome of events, but I'm going to manage my energy with awareness today. And if you could do that, magic starts to happen.
And do you think it's better to do one longer 20-minute block or two 10-minute chunks?
You know, I'm in disagreement about this with some other teachers.
I've heard different things as well.
Yeah, I'm a proponent of longer is better.
Okay.
I am. I think if you, even if you didn't meditate every day, if you sat for an hour once every few days, I think that's better than once every day for 10 minutes. Now, other teachers disagree with me on that. The reason I think that it's better is because it can take 10, 20, or 30 minutes just for the noise in your head to start to calm down before you reach any sense of depth. And that even is true for me. Sometimes I'll sit for 10 minutes. I'm sure many of you listening to this, if you've meditated, you've had this experience where you close your eyes to meditate, and then 10 minutes later, you wake up out of some thought sequence that you're like, holy crap, I was arguing with my ex. I totally forgot I was meditating. And so usually it takes, we can't create an energetic mess for 12 hours a day and think we're going to clean it up in 5 minutes. So it usually takes longer. It's just like exercise. If you do 3 push-ups every day, you're going to not make any real progress. Right? You got to go longer. You have to push the envelope and get to the edge where you're uncomfortable and where you're like, oh, I freaking hate this. I don't like meditating. That's usually when something deep is about to arise. Sweet. And the farther away you feel, the closer you actually are. So if you're feeling in a lot of resistance, good. sit with that. There's something important there.
That's interesting because I've done 10, 15, 20 minute meditations and the whole time I'm just thoughts nonstop. And at the end of the 20 minutes, I'm like, well, that wasn't any good. That didn't do anything. I mean, I just sat there and worried for 20 minutes.
Have you ever done a flotation tank?
I've done a flotation tank.
Isn't it true that like for you, it is for me that only in the last like 15 minutes do you start to settle?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the first few minutes, I'm just trying to figure out what the hell I'm doing in there. And then it takes a while to, yeah, I think you're right, to kind of calm the signal.
It does. If we were living 150 years ago, I bet you if we were meditating, it would take you 2 minutes to drop in. But there's just so much mental noise out in the ethers now that we absorb. It just takes longer.
Okay. Yeah. So you touched on some of the benefits of meditation. What are some of the unexpected benefits? Have you had people say some things that you were like, wow, that's...
Yeah, couple. One is an existential benefit. If I was to ask you, what was the first memory you've ever had? How old were you?
Oh, probably 3-4 years old.
3 or 4. Almost everybody says that. Some people will say 2, right? We have a random memory, maybe not even something very significant. Mine was just like staring at a wall, literally, and just playing with my imagination. And all of a sudden, we're on this planet called Earth. And then they tell us our name. And here we are. And we're supposed to grow up and get an education and a partner and a job and have kids. And this whole time, we're in this race to like build wealth and do things. And now we're hacking ourselves to feel better. We never stop to ask, wait, who the hell am I? How did I get on this planet? And why am I here? Nobody knows.
Minor details.
Yeah. Your priest will just tell you God ordained it. And your scientist will tell you that you're meaningless. You're just a bio machine that was created from evolution. There's no real purpose outside of what you think it is. And there's just, you have no, you know, why am I here? And so for me, there's a deep existential experience that you could have in meditation where maybe you can't intellectualize the why, but you start to touch on something really valuable. And I think that's the most maybe unintended consequence for a lot of people in meditation. And then the other is you start to find your answers, deeper answers, not just to why am I here, but like questions that you're trying to answer for your everyday life. Is this the right partner? What do I want to create next? Those answers start to arise.
Is there a manifestation element to the meditation as well? I know we're talking about mantras and things like that, but can you, and again, I think it's a great point to wake up in the morning and instead of grabbing your phone and going on Instagram and checking emails and text is, you know, use that quiet time where your brain is and your body is very suggestive before it's been kind of polluted with all of this stuff throughout the day. And then maybe visualize or manifest either that day things happening or I guess your life in general, right?
That's how I do my early morning meditations is I'll sit still for a while and then I'll start to ask the question, what is the energetic theme of the day for me? Without, you know, saying this is what I want it to be. We have to take off that expectation. Otherwise, the deeper part of ourselves can't give us a real answer. So I'm not saying this is what I want it to be. I'm asking what is the energetic theme for me today? What am I here to learn and grow into? And then something always surprising arises, like I'll have this image of, oh, I need to do some healing on a past relationship, or today's really a day of creating and sharing, or today it looks like solitude. And these deep answers start to arise and they almost help you create your path for the day. So you're consciously creating it versus falling into other people's agenda all day long.
Yeah, I think what I do as well is, and it's a bad thing, is I want things to happen that day. You know, I want to have a good meeting. I want that email and that problem rectified. And correct me if I'm wrong, is that the ego? And a lot of people like to throw this word ego out there. Is that taking over?
Sure. I mean, we could phrase it that way. And by ego, I mean, not the ego of like, I'm the best, but the bigger sense of the ego of the entity that is in your head that believes it is you, that you are, I am the past. I am what people think of me. I am an accumulation of judgments and criticisms and praises, right? That it almost takes its own form and we believe we are that. So if I criticize you and you're like, hey, how could you say that about me? I hate you now. That part of us, that's not truly who we are. It's almost an accumulated personality versus our true nature underneath that. So when we start to meditate deeply, it has less of a grip on us. And then when that happens, all of a sudden our true desires that are connected with life start to come out. So instead of like, I want to make a shitload of money today, You know, so people think I'm great. Oh, actually, today looks like a day I need to just process emotion. Like, that's probably a deeper truth. And then funny enough, when you stick with that over and over again, your life starts to unfold better and you get quote unquote lucky. Because what I found is your energy shifts and then people like that and they want to be around you more and they give you more opportunity and things just unfold nicely. We all want to be around people who have great energy and nobody wants to be around a negative Nilly, right?
Yeah.
So when your energy shifts, all of a sudden life starts to open in so many ways.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Yeah, especially both in attracting people that are kind of like-minded and also repelling or recognizing the people that maybe haven't started or maybe they're on a different path.
They're like, you're positive and annoying. I'm staying away from you. You're like, great.
Yeah, it's like a filter, I guess.
It is.
An awareness filter.
It is.
We've touched on some of the benefits of meditation and mindfulness. Let's talk about sleep. So, and I know you have a podcast as well as that, and we'll talk about that as well.
Sure.
But what can someone gain in their sleep by closing their eyes or just, you know, meditating throughout the day? How are they connected?
And even before sleep. So I highly recommend you fall asleep meditating. What better way to go to sleep than consciously? So when you meditate and you bring your cortisol level down, for example, or you just feel better, you know who you are, naturally, you're going to most likely sleep better. I think that most of our sleep issues, and you could speak to this a lot more than I can, like I'm sure a lot of your patients have said to you, I can't get my mind to stop going. Do you hear that often?
Almost every single patient.
Every single patient. So yeah. The core issue is what we've been talking about. We can hack our way, I think, to a certain percentage,
yeah.
Right? There are physical things that we can do better, with no doubt about that. If you can get 20% better because you've got a great cooling mattress or, you know, your room is dark, you've taken a good melatonin, whatever, I think all of that is fantastic. But at the core of it, if you're not well mentally and emotionally, you're never going to get good sleep. So when we meditate and we heal ourselves from the inside out, we naturally start to get better sleep. So I think that coupled with a good practice around getting to bed, which is what you're an expert in, those two together are very powerful.
Yeah, that racing mind is literally everybody complains about
every
that.
Single person.
And it's a terrible thing. I mean, I think we've all been subject to it.
So we have to wear the special bulletproof glasses with the lenses so there's no blue light, and we have to turn off our electronics anywhere from 30 minutes to 2 hours before we go to bed. All of those are helpful, but if you're super angry at your partner or you're mad your career isn't further along or you're just frustrated with life, you know, you're going to have a hard time sleeping no matter what supplements you use. And so you have to face it eventually head on.
You have to face it head on. And that's the thing a lot of people, including myself, for a long time, have just kind of diverted around it. And then what it just accumulates, like you mentioned. And then at some point, breakdowns.
And a lot of people will only have dreams that pertain to these deep emotional states. Like they'll have arguments every night. They'll wake up with the same kind of emotional tone because what they're not dealing with in their waking state, their unconscious is trying to deal with in their sleep state. And so they're getting poor sleep because the rest of their system is trying to deal with an energy that their conscious mind refuses to.
That's crazy. So there we go. So if you focus on the consciousness and the awareness, that will tend to declutter or clean up the mess. So that way you're not having to deal with it trying to fall asleep or at night.
There's a field of negativity in each of us.
Really?
No matter who you are. And if you don't deal with that, that field of negativity will translate into your sleep. And then the rest of you will have to deal with it. And again, around and around you go. You know, in India, they believe in reincarnation, where if you don't deal with something and learn the lesson, you're reborn over and over and you keep attracting the same people to learn this lesson. I think we're reincarnating every morning with the same issues over and over until we deal with them. You don't even need past lives. Literally, it's happening constantly. So if you're finding you're creating the same themes in your life again and again, there's probably something that you're not dealing with. And I have no doubt that it'll affect your sleep.
Okay. Speaking of sleep, do you have any tips or do you have a special routine that you like that you want to share with people how to get a better night's rest?
Yeah. So I've been working on this for a while and I really do love biohacking sleep. I think there's so many useful tools out there. I darken my room as much as possible. I use special shades. I have a humidifier because in Southern California, it's dry.
Yep.
I have an air filter that I use every single night. It also creates a bit of white noise, which I like because LA is a little bit noisy or a lot noisy. I take magnesium before I go to bed. And when I travel, I take melatonin, but I try to limit it to 3 grams or less. I'm very sensitive.
3 milligrams. Yeah.
If I take too much melatonin, I have terrible dreams. I wake up feeling really strange. I'm so sensitive to it. So I'll even take a half a 3.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah. But I try not, you know, I'm only mid 30s. So I try not to take melatonin all the time, but I use it when I travel, when I need to re-regulate my sleep. And then, you know, we all have different chronotypes, right? We're all different kinds of sleepers. Some of us are night owls. Some of us, you know, we go to bed super early in different stages in our life, I think, as well. As you know, you see older people, they'll go to bed earlier and earlier. So you have to be conscious of where you actually are in that cycle as well. And for me, I do much better when I go to bed by 10, 10:30. Mm-hmm. It's another world the next day than when I go to bed after 11. It's literally night and day. So you have to be super sensitive to that as well. So, you know, nothing crazy, but those are kind of the tools that I use. Obviously, I try to get off of technology as early as I can before bed. And if I am on something, I'll use an app to make sure it reduces the blue light. And I work with a company called Parsley Health, and I use their supplements. I like them, like their magnesium. And they've also helped me a lot with my microbiome, which has helped me with my sleep. So I had a parasite that I was working on beating. And so much of my diet was affecting my sleep that I didn't realize. Back in the day, I'd eat a lot of sugar. And so that was affecting it. And I don't drink a lot of coffee at all, but if I ever had it after noon, literally I couldn't fall asleep till midnight. And I couldn't put those two together because I was like, I haven't had coffee since 2 p.m. There's no way. And I'm so sensitive to coffee that it was keeping me up. So you might check into that as well and see what's going on there.
Well, this has been fascinating. I'm really excited that we were able to get a chance to connect here. I know I've showcased a lot of different products and technologies in the recent shows. And by the way, if you haven't checked those out, please go back and take a look and listen and see if these are things that could help you with your life. But meditation seems to be something that's grown on me a lot lately. Mindfulness, awareness, calming the mind. I mean, these are all practices that are literally free if you want. You just can go down different roads and learn more. And they're beneficial, as you've heard on the show, at all kinds of different times, whether it's a daily practice, whether it's you're on a flight and you're stressed out and you want to just take a little break, you could do it there. So lots of benefits. And speaking of people, if they want to learn more about you or your services, where would they go to do that?
Sure. A couple places. One easy place to start is you could find me on the app Insight Timer, which is a really popular meditation app. And obviously I have a sleep podcast called Grounded Sleep, which is, you know, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube. And then all my stuff is centered on davidgandelman.com.
DavidGandelman.com, folks. David, thanks so much for being on the show. This has been a blast. I'm always excited to learn from you and about all these different opportunities that we can tap into in our lives and take advantage of. So thanks for coming on the show. This has been awesome.
Thanks for having me. And me and Jay are going to go meditate now.
We're going to go have a little meditation, folks. Talk to you all later. Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, folks. And that's a wrap for the meditation episode. I hope you found few tips to up your game. I know I did. And if you haven't tried meditation, I highly recommend you give it a shot. Relatively easy to do, relatively inexpensive, and can be highly transformative for your life. And as always, if you want to learn more about me, you can find me on Instagram at my account there. It's called Sleep Biohacker. It's all one word. And I am someone who likes to hack my sleep. And as we talked about in the show, I think meditation is a powerful tool to help you get better sleep and deal with the stresses of this crazy, crazy life. And one other request is if you find this show helpful, please tag, share, like, post, throw it on an Instagram story and tag Sleep Biohacker and I'll see it. And that helps me just get the word out and the show out so I can continue to provide content for you guys and get some great guests on the show and share their expertise with you in how to improve your life and your sleep. So with that said, thanks again for making it all the way to the end of the show. I hope you continue to come back and listen to some more great content coming up and have the best night ever. Bye-bye.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only. Statements and views expressed in this show are not medical advice. The show, including Dr. Jay Crisandi, the co-host, guest, and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of any information contained herein. Opinions of the guests are their own. We do not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests, nor do we make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. If you think you have a medical problem, please consult a licensed physician.